The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Good morning to you. It's just turning 9 minutes past 10 this Tuesday morning. You're very welcome back to the programme. Some of your comments here as we head towards the bingo numbers. Micheál Martin does not speak for the Irish people, says this listener. He has no right to be parading around Kyiv or endangering Ireland, and especially our youth who would be forced into the military in a pan-European army. He is a disgrace. I wonder, and I presume Russia had to give its permission for that meeting to take place in Kyiv yesterday, because it was well known in advance, and obviously it would be very easy to target such a meeting. So there must have been some back channeling with Russia to see if it was okay for all of these leaders to go to Kyiv for that meeting. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but one would have to imagine that that assurance or an assurance would have to have been given there. Housekeepers, it's the new name for cleaners. If you could let Lee know. Okay. That's Lee Gooch, presumably. I don't know what that conversation was. Vape should have been available by prescription only to help those trying to quit, believes a listener. I wouldn't like to talk, as I'm very frustrated with services in Ireland, would only get worked up about it, says the listener, I can imagine. Think Dunlow ladies will be up challenging the Big Two in a few years. A lot of well-coached young talent coming through. They have won so much at underage. They seem to be a well-drilled bunch there on Sunday. Very athletic-looking team and a deep squad too, it would seem. So I would say you are probably right. A caller says a 16-year-old can drive a high-powered tractor and tow a trailer on a public road without ever doing a driving test. Is that the case? Another caller says, they go on to say, it's crazy that we allow people who cannot drive permission to be in charge of such a dangerous vehicle and carry on. Let's face it, we all know many of them do not have a full driver on with them, especially here in Donegal. A caller says Bus Éireann does not care about their passengers. They've got no consideration for elderly or people with disabilities. Same as most things around. Make life harder for them. That's all we see happening. A joke in the year that we are and supposed to be so advanced and ahead of ourselves. Travelled with Bus Éireann last 30 years. They were better back in the years, only getting worse day by day. And back then, they would have added buses, not left you sitting there with no answer. Hi, Greg. Can someone please answer my question? As someone who drives for a living, I see a lot of left-hand drive cars on the road, some of them over and over again in the last couple of years. Why are they not registered in this country? Why is it same as buying a car in the north? You have 30 days to clear tax, NCT. Who's responsible for the NCT and tax and insurance on these cars? There is derogation there. I'll check the legislation on it, but there is a derogation there at the moment. If you're on about cars, maybe they came in from Ukraine, I presume. A caller says, I've smoked since I was 12 years old. When I was 25, I finally quit, but only with the help of a vape. And then I was on it for 7 years. Late last year, there was a traumatic event in my family and I bought a box of cigarettes. Worst mistake of my life. I've been smoking since. I'm so annoyed at myself. Well, listen, at the end of the day, you stopped smoking for 7 years. You had a traumatic event in your life. You achieved 7 years. Okay, you've relapsed a little, but now's the time to say, right, so I'm going to pack them in again. I don't think you should be annoyed at yourself. Obviously, there's something very stressful that forced you back into smoking. Give yourself a break. Look at the amount of money and your health you saved in the 7 years. You know you can do it, so just do it again. It'll be no bother to you whatsoever. And as I say, stop beating yourself up. You achieved great and can do so again. I work with the homeless. I've seen homeless people spend their last €2 on a single cigar rather than a loaf of bread or a pack of rashers. The heaviest addicted smokers will prioritise tobacco over food. Mind you, the old custom of sharing the cigarette is gone because they're too expensive now. Again, you know, there are obviously people in society that need assistance in stopping smoking. And it sounds like these people that you talk of need additional help, be it through support or even maybe putting them on vapes or whatever. I don't know, but we've never really embraced vaping officially in this country as an alternative to smoking. But I don't think anyone wants to see someone in a very desperate situation who's dependent on nicotine. And if you've never been dependent on nicotine, you won't know how hard an addiction it is. Those people should be assisted and not forced to choose between a cigarette or a cigar and food. I don't want to live in a society that forces people into those situations. Good morning, Greg. You know, listeners complaining about someone smoking in a TV show, yet have no problem with the porn shown on Channel 4 aimed at kids. Just shows the bad world we now live in. Smoking bad, grooming kids good. I think you're referencing a show. It wasn't for kids. It was a strange program, to be honest with you. I think it was there was a lot of adults standing in front of a select group of children. Don't know what the purpose of it was. Don't know what it achieved. I don't know if it was for titillation or whatever it is. I don't agree with it at all. To be honest with you, I didn't watch the show. I don't know what it's about. But I mean, if we don't talk about something because something else is bad, we literally have nothing to talk about. You know, we would literally have nothing to talk about. But I know what you're saying. I wasn't comfortable with that show at all. I didn't see the purpose of it. And I'd be afraid that someone might get some sort of a kick from watching it because there are some very strange individuals out there. So I would agree with you. I don't think that show should have been made. But also, I don't think that smoking should be glamorized in TV shows that children are likely to watch. All right. Welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Let me see. Morning, Greg. Sorry, but people need to stop saying that the only refugees coming into Ireland, there's so many different nationalities arriving in Ireland and the taxpayer has to fund them when we have so many Irish struggling and getting no assistance from the government, they say. All right, that is certainly one point of view.
The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, protecting what you value most. Call today and get your zero-wire alarm system from €299. Sheridan Security, 91-26025.
Okay, it's time to welcome into studio for this week's Community Garda information item, Garda Sergeant Paul Wallace. Good morning, Paul. Good to have you in with us again.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks very much.
Right, okay. Starting with some sad news this morning.
Yeah, just to note, and starting on a sad note this morning, I just want to remember our young colleague, Honorary Garda Owen Brogan from Castletor Carrigans. His shoulder number was HR185, who passed away over the weekend and it was buried yesterday. Owen was a lovely little lad, part of the Honorary Garda that we have in Donegal. He had an induction 2 years ago and the Army were there that day at a school out in Carrigans, and then he graduated in November 21. So our thoughts and prayers are at this sad time are with his parents Robert and Anne, his brother William, sister Kellyanne, Louise and Aoife, and the grandparents James and Bernadette, Sharkey and Newton. So it's a very difficult time, so may his gentle soul rest in peace. I just want to say that.
Yes, indeed, and we join you in that. Our thoughts are with Owen's family.
Yeah, the Little Blue Heroes do a lot of work for these little children, and you know, it's tough on them too, and the wider community there.
Yeah, for sure. But that's a sign of the importance of Garda Owen Brogan and the impact he had in his short life. Yes. A beautiful young boy. Garda had their open day at the Garda station there at the weekend. Saw some pictures and videos from it. Seemed like a lovely event.
Same as. I missed it myself. I was away. But it was a good day, and I suppose we have to thank your own staff, Paul McDevitt, Jimmy Stafford and Lee Gooch, who was there as well. The Garda Síochána Facebook page, anyone wants to check in with it. The faces of the children say everything, but we also have to thank all the services who are there, the Coast Guard, the RNLI, the Civil Defence, the Coast Guard helicopter, all of that, the Army, the faces say it all, and kids love to come in and see these emergency vehicles, be seen what can happen in a friendly atmosphere. That event was to happen last year, and it was on the day actually after the Chrysler tragedy, yeah. And we couldn't go ahead with it. But look, we were anxious to get it done before the weather would turn, and at least it was a good day, and it seemed to be enjoyed by all.
Yeah, as you say, lots of happy, smiling faces. Already yeah. Seeing reports of people reporting on their social media and what have you, fireworks. We aren't that far away now from Halloween, but already people's peace and quiet being disturbed.
Well, it is, and we're at the beginning of October. Halloween's approaching, so, you know, Donegal is a difficult location. We've spoken about this lots of times. We have Operation Tombola that deals with all of this. And it's being in a border county where in the adjoining jurisdiction you can buy them quite freely, and they're legal to a point there. We just want people, parents really, to sit down and talk with the kids about the dangers around associated with the use of firearms or fireworks, I should say, and to realise that it is an offence to possess unlicensed fireworks other than low hazard fireworks like party poppers, sparklers and that sort of thing, or to have them with intent to sell or supply or to throw them or ignite them. Now, there are two sections of the community that are very vulnerable and get very, very upset and afraid at this time are our older people, whether it's urban, whether they're urban based or rural, in housing estates, that sort of thing, and the animal community that are out there and are important as anybody else, dogs, livestock, all of that. So people should think, you don't want to be end up getting a conviction or being having dealings with the guards and having a file sent to the DPP for being in possession of these things.
And as sure as night follows day, there will be people presenting at EDs up and down the country fingers missing,
damaged eyes.
And it is going to happen because it happens every single year.
Every single year. And, you know, you could have a life-changing injury there that could be prevented. And, like, parents have a role and guardians have a role to play here. We want everyone to enjoy Halloween, be safe. And if you want to go to fireworks, go to an organised legal event. And there's an organised legal event not that far from here in Derry City. It's actually tremendous to see, but it also brings, you can see what the impact that fireworks have, how dangerous they are too, and they're handled by professional people. So people get injured. Think about it. Parents, talk to them about it. Think about if you're buying fireworks, what you are actually taking into your home and the harm it can do, and the harm it can do out in the community to the elderly and to the animals in your area.
And people with newborn babies and dogs all around the houses and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it is a difficult one because one sounds like a party pooper, but these are explosive devices. You don't know what's in them and what way they'll perform or react. And
well, that's a very good point because a lot of them aren't CE marked and anything like that there. So you just don't know what you have in your hand there. Yeah. You're supposed to do this and the bright packaging and all of that.
But you're effectively setting fire to pipe bombs in your garden.
Yes.
And also, too, it is actually really quite a serious crime.
Yeah.
I'll come back to the property market if you don't mind. We'll go on to the coastal communities first, because this is sort of, I mean, obviously with the activity we've seen off the coast, and we've learned a little bit more about how drugs are moved around the place, and I suppose we're starting to maybe see some theories as to why we had massive amounts of cocaine wash up on Donegal's shores. But you also want to warn our coastal communities about drug importation, but generally looking after their stuff as well.
Well, looking after their stuff. And, you know, I was last in here on the 14th of August. I didn't think I'd be back in here today, but as you know, Grania had an injury, so we must send good wishes
get
to
well
her.
Soon, Grania.
Good, well, good Grania.
Like, Grania. Really soon.
Really soon.
No offence, Paul, but like, you know, you can get up here within the next 5 minutes.
Yeah, with all the appeals that I haven't got. Look, we saw that week on the 14th. That was the week after the bales washed up down in Hornhead and Dunfanny and that. And we saw then last week it on a grander scale or whatever. And then there was links in relation to that with this county where two individuals, possibly the two that went on the sandbank, were in Killybegs. There were two individuals in Killybegs attempting to buy a trawler. And the trawler man would have been glad of the sale because of the way the fishing has gone and all of that sort of thing, which is terrible in itself, being a native of Burton Port. The trawler man became suspicious then because he knew these guys, they weren't adept at handling a boat or they weren't asking the right questions. And I suppose a transaction, any money transaction now, it can leave you very vulnerable. So he pulled out. So it's possible that these guys went to Castletown Bear then and bought that boat. And obviously were lucky to escape with their lives and had to be winched to safety and all of that. And then we had the big ship then. And, you know, when you look at the route that ship took from South America up along the coast of Africa, slowing down at the Canary Islands, going very close to the coast of Portugal and France, it wouldn't take a lot of imagination to figure out what was going on there. Yeah. And a big ship then going up into the Irish Sea and turning around like a pleasure craft up and down and over and back. And, you know, there was tremendous work done by all the agencies and particularly by the brave people who boarded that boat, you know, just as the drugs were, they were attempting to...
Yeah, I don't think even the video gives... I don't think, because obviously that boat at that point was taking evasive maneuvers, trying to get into national waters. I don't think the video really demonstrates how tough winching down from a helicopter onto a floating evasive vessel like that, how difficult that would have been.
And it doesn't take into account, and we watch it all the time, and I heard former Assistant Commissioner Pat Leahy on RTE on Sunday there, and he was talking about, you know, it was a scene worthy of an action movie. But for the brave people on the Ranger Wing who dropped down on that rope, you're a sitting duck. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't know what firepower was below you.
Well, how desperate those
below you
are. Or
how desperate they were. And the desperation, I think, was manifested when the captain had a seizure or whatever, and then he had to be medevaced off the ship. So, you know, these guys were, they were sitting ducks on both sides, and there was a lot of money involved, and, you know, there will be probably repercussions. But, like, all I'm saying today is people in coastal communities, fishermen in particular, fishers as they're properly termed now, they know people that are adept at handling boats and stuff like that, and we can't allow our communities to be taken over by these people who will use our nooks and crannies and small piers and all of that. And that goes to cars and vans travelling up and down narrow roads and stuff at night. We need to know that. Mm. The guards are there to protect your community, but they're no good if the community doesn't interact with them. So it's not just the guards, I should say, the revenue as well, who are part of the bigger operation. Mm-hmm. And like, the guards have their confidential line. If you don't feel confident in speaking to somebody and you're afraid as such, 1-800-666-111 is on the side of every patrol car.
Yep,
and revenue, as I say, have theirs, 1-800-295-295.
You know, unfortunately, we don't have the sonar required to. Sometimes what they do from these vessels, they drop submarine type, torpedo type items to the surface of the seabed, and then on a timer they open up and the floats come, the drugs come to the top. So in other words, we can't really detect that at this point. So it's really important then that the fishers are the eyes and ears of the community,
and people walking beaches.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, everybody has a role to play, I should say.
Right. You know? So we can tie in the two issues. Obviously, maritime equipment might be tied up or back behind the house or maybe close to shore or whatever. Boat engines, incredibly, incredibly valuable, handy enough to move. So keep an eye on those. But also, there's property marking equipment there and a property marking event upcoming as well.
There's one upcoming in Dromahol, but, you know, we will be rolling these, particularly over the winter. And if you have a big engine on a boat, if you make contact with your community guardy, they'll go out and mark it on site. If you can bring it into one of the days, do. It's a good time to get it done over the autumn and the summer, and it'll be done for next year. And if it's marked, it is less attractive to the thief. We have a reschedule. It was due to the weather back at the end of July, property marking day out in Dromahol at the football pitch there on Saturday, this Saturday coming, the 8th, between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. They'll be there with the TELUS machine, marking machine, which has been provided by the Joint Policing Committee. And so bring along your tractor, trailer, quad, power washer, bicycle, even your mobile phone, and know your air code and get them marked. It's deliberately put out there because it's a big farming community out there, so we're sort of appealing to them. It's aimed at the farmer community who can and will be targeted by thieves. And we have a very good community alert, text alert scheme out there too, and they're very vibrant. So they were anxious to have that out there, and it's part of their plan for the year.
Yeah, I know your focus is on crime prevention and assisting businesses and homeowners, but are you familiar with the legislation? I can look it up afterwards, but we've had a couple of texts on it that permits people who've moved here from the Ukraine and taken their vehicles to drive them here. Obviously, people would know that if you take a car in from Derry, you have to very quickly get it crossed over. Now, if you don't, as I say, I know...
off the top of my head, I'm being honest, and you know this, if I don't know something, that's always been my motto here in your time. Sean's time, or Father Sean, as we call him now. I won't speculate, but... all I know is what I think there is dispensations given.
A derogation
or dispensation, whatever way you want to call it. around insurance, driving licences, and probably the registration of the cars, yeah. because a lot of these people would be hoping possibly to go back.
Yeah. I know Ukrainian and roadworthiness certificates are accepted over here. I know there was an agreement between the Insurance Federation. Yeah. So, listen, I'll check that out.
Not exactly sure on that, and certainly people are right to raise it too. It's something to think about. Thinking some of our traffic people are supposed to ensure that cars, we all have to have our cars NCT'd now. Yeah.
It's just to make sure, especially with the, we're talking about road safe now, just to make sure everyone knows what the rules are.
But it's just a question that came in as
I know the way you are, and I know the way you are, and I knew I could put that to you, but we'll get the answers. Mm. But there's definitely something in place, but I suppose it's good everyone knows, because Gardaí are asking the public all the time to call in if you see anything, and people, I suppose, need to know what's allowed and what
isn't
allowed.
It's good to see people asking that question as well.
We are getting unfortunate, terrible, tragic reminders of the dangers on our roads. Pedestrians, we had an awful situation of the loss of life of pedestrians, I think it was the weekend before last, and road traffic collisions both here and right across the country. We've high rates of death, and the figure that we don't have but we know is huge is high rates of really serious injury, life-altering injuries, and I suppose it's a reminder, and you want to remind people about driving behaviour, Paul.
Yeah, well, look, at today is Tyre Safety Day. They say the research says that 14 deaths are contributed to bad tyres. And it's not just the tread, it can be bulging, cracks, all of that sort of thing. And we had a van seized by Buchancrana Roads Police in recent days there, which led to, I think, it's no insurance as well. So, you know, it's something to think about, your tyres, your tread depth, the type of tyres you have on, all of that. So it's Tyre Safety Day. Also in relation, we have the Road Safety Show, which basically had its birth or its gestation here in Highland when we started off years and years ago, and it evolved into this down in the Aura for the students, the second level students, today and tomorrow, and that's co-hosted by Donegal County Council, who we're very grateful for their help and assistance there. But, you know, it goes back to the simple things, driving under the influence of alcohol and drugs, making your speed, wearing your seatbelt. There's a lot of talk about the speed then, about reducing the speed and all of that. I'm not convinced that that's the answer either. It's driving behaviour. I was listening on the radio yesterday evening about people, and one young guy was being interviewed. He'd done his theory test and he'd done his lessons, and then he couldn't get the test. And as he said, and he was quite right in what he said, the bad habits creep in then, in that vacuum. Mm-hmm. Now, looking at the numbers there, and I know your numbers are from August 23 because I saved them incorrectly.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, on the 14th of August 23, which was the last day I sat here, 24 pedestrians had lost their lives. That's up to 32 today, as of 9 o'clock this morning. Drivers were 41. It's up to 47. E-scooters were 2. It's up to 3. Motorcycles were 15. It's up to 18. And cyclists were 1, and it's up to 4. So
that's a lot of devastation in Irish homes.
You know, since the last time that we talked, we're plus 31 people who were alive that morning who are not alive today. And I think, like, I know Donal covered it on the news, Buchancrana Road Policing Unit, detecting somebody doing 166 kilometres in an 80-kilometre zone. No, mad stuff. Our numbers on the 14th of August were 105 tragic people who lost their lives. And you said, we're not talking about the life-changing injuries, you know, and we seem to forget about that. And we're up now to 136.
Yeah, I think it's 14 to 1 or something, the ratio is for every life lost.
Yeah.
I think it's 13 or 14. I'll have to double check
that. Something like that.
It is, it's shocking.
But like when you think of like the pedestrians that there was, 8 people that were walking around the last day I was here, 6 drivers who were driving around, 1 e-scooter user, 3 motorcyclists and 3 cyclists here were doing whatever they were doing, like any of us,
and snatched from people's lives. You know, like it's crazy, because one on a Friday you're saying, how was your week? What's your plans for the weekend? And on Monday, you're at their funeral. That's
you
how
can be yourself in the Donegal Democrat.
That's how quickly it turns around.
And statistics are difficult. I think you have to break them down like that. It's like I used to say years ago, and we'd be doing, you know, 150 people lost their lives. Yeah. But when you say if three buses left Busairn or Busiris in Dublin heading for Letterkenny over the period of 9 months or a year and never reached Letterkenny, there'd be public outcry.
Yep.
So we all have our part to play, be it our tyres, be it our behaviour, be it the wearing of seatbelts.
And road conditions as well. Make sure hedges are cut, that the crap from the hedges doesn't lie in the roads, the potholes are filled.
Please just try. Can be any of us.
Caller, a couple of callers wants to know, should we be concerned about Garda cover on Tuesdays for the next while? Are we going to see, do you know off the top of your head, if we're going to see a depletion?
I don't think you'll see a depletion. There's as it's been well publicised, there's the GRA are saying that their people aren't available to perform overtime and all that. And I suppose that probably is more applicable in the big urban centres because we always have a standard amount that we have there and we have what they call an abstraction rate where only so many people are allowed on leave. I don't think there should be concerns. I suppose it's something none of us who are members of An Garda Síochána like to see this industrial disharmony or whatever it is, and hopefully it will resolve. And it's just a difficult period now for both sides.
I know you're not in the executive of the AGSI anymore.
Not anymore, mistaken, no. But
do the AGSI have a position on
well,
on
the
this?
AGSI have been in negotiations and they've publicly stated that they have no issue with the stewardship of Drew Harris, which other organisations have a different view. When I was there, we were part of the negotiations that started off with what they call the Westmonton roster in 2012. Went on up then to the COVID roster, which was introduced overnight, and everybody stood up and were part of that, the four on, four off. Operationally, the commissioner says it's costing him money that he's not able to spend in other areas, and the abstraction rate is difficult for crime investigation and follow through the four on, four off. The people on the ground find it better from a work-life balance and all that, and travel and costs. So it's not, there's a whole, and I know Brendan O'Connor has articulated his view very well, president of the GRA. It's probably just not just one issue. It's about lifestyle choice and about expenses and about all of that. But hopefully some, the AGSI have proposed, have sent in a roster. I think it was in May it went in. And that was being considered, and it's hinging around the 6 days on, 4 days off, and a shorter shift from 12 back to 10. And that hasn't been fully determined on. I'm not fully up to speed, and I wouldn't propose to be because I'm not at the executive table anymore. But it is a difficult time for everybody, and you can imagine the public are probably feeling a bit unnerved about all this too, because the people don't like to see their police forces.
No, they don't. But the difficulty too, Paul, is that it's the personal nature of the dispute between Mr. Harris and the GRA. And yes, the GRA have said certain things, but sort of Drew Harris has called them out in certain ways too. It's going to take an awful lot to rebuild that relationship.
Well, I don't want to get into that because that's between
the GRA
and the Garda Commissioner and. I think a lot of it probably then social media then fills that vacuum where people can express their opinion freely and all that. So it's just, it's a difficult
hopefully
time. It takes a time for cool heads now, and just hopefully it'll be resolved before the 6th of November.
All right, thanks very much, Paul. Garda Sergeant Paul Wallace. That was Community Guard information for this Tuesday, the 3rd of October. We're back next Tuesday after the 10 o'clock news. Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. We're joined on the programme now by a consultant in public health, the consultant in public health with the HSE West, Dr. Anthony Breslin. Good morning to you, Anthony. Thanks for your time today.
Not at all. Morning to you.
It's great to have you with us. We're talking about the HSE's autumn-winter vaccination programme. It got underway yesterday, and there's a free flu and COVID-19 vaccine available to recommended groups. Do you take them as a pair or break them down into the flu and then the COVID vaccine, Anthony?
Ideally, if you can get them both at the same time, that's what we'd recommend. There might be a small number of people who maybe had COVID a week ago, and they should delay the COVID vaccine for 3 months. If you haven't had COVID recently, get the two vaccines, that a one-stop shop approach. That's what we're recommending.
Some people may have the symptoms of COVID but didn't test. If they suspect they've had COVID, should they avoid the COVID vaccine, or would they just maybe talk to whoever's administering it and get the advice?
It depends on the circumstances. Obviously, the easier thing is to go and get an antigen test, save yourself a trip to the GP, the pharmacist, or the COVID vaccination centre. If that's negative, wait until you're well. Don't get anything until your symptoms are gone anyhow for any vaccine. And then once you're better, go and get your vaccine in that case.
Right. So the COVID-19 autumn winter booster vaccine is recommended for those aged over 50 and with also long-term health conditions and then the flu vaccine for over 65. So yes, I don't want to confuse people.
Basically,
so.
there are two sort of, there's two groups as it were, age-based and then risk-based. Over 65 for the flu, over 50, as you said, for the COVID. If you have a medical condition, poor immune response, heart disease, diabetes, etc., you should, and you're under those age groups, both vaccines are recommended as well. And obviously, the intranasal vaccine, flu vaccine, is recommended for children. You can get that from your GP as well. And some very young children might be able to get it in schools as well. That's something new we're offering this year. All the recommendations can be seen on the HSE website, because there are other groups that need it. Obviously, healthcare staff pushing that big time. To stop them getting sick, stop them passing it to their clients, making them available for work, which is very important. Also, for instance, poultry workers should be getting the flu vaccine because they are at risk of flu, and we don't want them getting flu and avian influenza. It hasn't happened, touch wood, but we want to reduce that risk as well. And then pregnant ladies should be getting the vaccines. They should also be getting the pertussis whooping cough vaccine, because that's what they get routinely. And just to get across the word that, yes, we're talking about vaccines, but don't forget the childhood vaccinations are out there as well. And they have fallen a bit post-COVID. We're trying to get people to get those vaccines up to date too. We need to make sure people are protected against measles, mumps, rubella, meningitis, hepatitis, etc.
As the conversation and debate that raged over the COVID-19 vaccine, which we're not returning to, obviously, as part of this conversation, has that had a knock-on effect, you know, people in their mind conflating one vaccine with another, or is it just a natural downward curve that might happen from time to time, Anthony?
Well, vaccine fatigue has happened, and we realise that, but we're trying to encourage people to overcome that. And also, because during COVID, people didn't have the access to the child vaccinations routinely as they did, that sort of got people out of the habit as well. And people with young children who had young children at the time, they didn't get the vaccines as easily as they would have pre-COVID. And if they have other children since then, they haven't had the experience of getting the vaccine. So we're just trying to get people back into the habit of protecting their children.
I presume this flu vaccine, like previous years, has been fashioned based on what we've seen so far in other parts of the world.
Yes.
Are we getting any indication of what kind of a flu season we might have?
We've seen a slight increase earlier timescale in Australasia. So we think we might get flu a tiny bit earlier than we have in the past. We've begun to see both in the UK and in Ireland a very, very small number of people admitted to hospital with flu infections. That's normal because we do get it once the season hits. But we're hoping that we don't get the big outbreaks until we get a lot of people vaccinated. That's the important thing.
Right, so the vaccination program started yesterday. For those inclined to get it, where can they get their vaccines?
You can get the vaccine from the GP, you can get vaccine from the pharmacist, they can get vaccines from the community vaccination teams. So they have a lot of choice. Make an appointment with the GP, make an appointment with the pharmacist, go online and book an appointment with the community vaccination teams. So there's a lot of choice out there.
Caller says, if you can't get two vaccines together, how long should you wait between?
Just as long as if you can't get the COVID vaccine because you've had COVID within the last 3 months, wait until 3 months is up for the COVID vaccines. But if you can get the two vaccines together, get them at the same time. It's one trip to the pharmacist, the GP or whatever. People, if they're traveling, for instance, can get lots of vaccines at the same time. Children get vaccines, lots of vaccines at the same time. There's nothing wrong with an adult getting vaccines at the same time. So that's the easier option.
Okay. Anything else you wish to add, Anthony, just as we wrap it up?
No, just to say the vaccines are out there, they're safe, they work, they stop people getting sick, they stop people being hospitalised, they stop the blocking of emergency departments, and we need them for our chest pains and RTAs and everything else. Don't forget the childhood vaccinations either, and also for healthcare staff to get their vaccines as well. That's very important.
If you had a booster in May, do you have to wait 6 months until November for...
If it suits you to get it after the 3 months, go and get it.
Okay.
You're not going to be turned away.
All right. Listen, thanks very much for your time. I do appreciate
not at all.
It. Okay. Take care.
Thank you for the opportunity.
No
Talk
problem.
To you again. Bye
you
now.
Too. Dr. Anthony Breslin, consultant in public health with HSE West. Greg, I got my flu jab today. I'll get the COVID jab next Tuesday. I was getting my bloods taken today. Okay. That's good for you. At the top of the program, a draft proposal has gone out which suggests a 3-tiered personal support to replace or reform disability payments. If you're not able to work, you get the higher rate, €265.30. But if you're the lower tier, where you have a capacity to work, and we still don't know how that will be determined, your payments will be €220 per week, and then you'll be provided with, I don't know whether they're compulsory or not, support and training to explore employment opportunities suited to your needs. There's a middle tier then, which also they say, well, maybe you can't do this type of work, but we can support you to do that type of work. And the aim being to get as many people who can work and want to work back to work. But already it's we're getting sort of almost like a divide and conquer situation where people are texting in saying, well, there's lots of people who don't want to work and they're sitting at home and they could be at work and they're on disability. But there are also disability groups who believe that maybe the employment opportunities aren't there for them. And this is just really about the government saving money. And they believe it's going to be a form of discrimination. It is a complex one. John Joe McGinley is founder of Autism Dad. And he joins us on the show now. Good morning to you, John Joe.
Good morning to all your listeners.
I suppose on the face of it, I mean, there are some positives in this. But just we'll focus firstly on the three tiers at this point. We've already... heard how it's following probably a British model, which has created quite a bit of poverty and disquiet over there. What do you believe the government's actual motivation is here?
Firstly, I think that if we take into account the UK model, not only has it caused disquiet and disharmony, but it's actually led to an increase in suicides amongst people with disabilities. And that's a terrible situation to be in. We can't look and try and mirror what the British government have done. What they've tried to do is, again, as you said, they've tried to divide and rule. And they've also penalised the most vulnerable in society to try and compensate for a shortfall in revenue. So they can try and save money in one area to then put it towards other areas, possibly for tax cuts. My biggest concern is that we're trying to mirror that there is a lot of disquiet that the current corporation tax revenues that we're getting will eventually reduce. With the ageing population, perhaps a negative kickback against PRSI increases to compensate for keeping the pension age as it is. The government is looking to save money in the social welfare budget. And again, disability, people with disabilities, children, young adults, and those living with disabilities all their lives are an easy target to go after. And I think it would be a very punitive and cruel system to implement where people are subjected to further medical examinations, filling out forms, looking for doctors' questionnaires to get just to what they're entitled to.
Like, how can you determine who is fit to work and how fit to work? Like if someone is on disability and they've lost the use of their left arm, if they have the use of the right arm, you know, not being facetious here at all, well, they could be deemed to be fit to work, but they may be of the view they simply cannot for a myriad of reasons, balance issues. I don't know what it is. I'm just using one, what would be, I think, a simple example as to how very confusing and how difficult it might be to actually deem someone's ability to work or face going on courses and training exercises and have the threat of their payments being cut.
That's a very valid point, but a lot of disabilities are hidden. They're unseen.
Yeah, for sure.
Even somebody with a physical disability may be suffering.
But
from
I'm using one. Sorry, John. I purposely use one where it's very cut and dry and clear. You know, and yes, even in that scenario, you could end up back and forwarding an appeal. Not to mention, I think the road you're going down now with the hidden disability, and I'll let you continue with it. But even in a very in your face obvious one, it's already complicated.
It's complicated, but again, you'd have to. We've got to focus on the system that they're trying to mirror. The British system has been privatised, sent out to private firms who are incentivised to put people into employment, regardless of their medical situation. They make money by making sure that people actually go into employment. I would hate to see us go down that road. What we have to do, and a key thing for me, especially with the hidden disabilities, is if we spend the money now by ensuring that children, young adults, the people with disabilities, be they hidden or relatively, you can see them, we can save money in the future. But what we've done as a state is we have a completely underfunded and in crisis situation for supplying support for people with additional needs and medical conditions. We have no speech and language therapists. We have no OTs. We have a complete crisis in the child disability network teams. And that is storing up a problem for the future. It would be far more economic sense, and we would save far more money now by investing in supporting people with disabilities, be they hidden or seen. And that would ensure that we allow them and we create them and give them the ability, the confidence, and the pathway into whatever type of employment we can possibly give them.
And John Joe, we'll
come, short-sighted activity.
We will come back to this issue because I believe it's going to be an important one. But the minister says this is about supporting people with a disability who want to work to work. You see it, though, as a cost-cutting exercise. And you say that we may see the devastating impacts this has had on people in Britain reflected here.
I believe that you should always look at evidence with your eyes. They are trying to mirror the British system. If we look to what the British system has inflicted on those with disabilities, it has caused misery, it has caused pain, and sadly, it has caused an increase in suicide rates within the UK and Northern Ireland. These are the facts. And that if we mirror this system by allowing the private enterprise to come in and then subject those most vulnerable in our society to an increased medical interventions and further reports, doctors' reports, medicals, what we'll end up with is a small proportion of people that, yes, there will be some that will benefit from a pathway to employment, but what we'll see is nothing but a cost-cutting exercise to allow our government to save money by attacking the most vulnerable in our society.
Okay.
And this part of the proposal has to be looked at in more depth and more detail. And I would hope that the politicians, especially those that we voted for in Donegal, would raise their voices and look to what has happened in the UK.
Yeah, but I don't understand why. But politics, I don't know what's wrong with politics in this country, but these issues, they don't take up, or it seems they're not taking up. At council level, in fairness now, there's been good work in raising the OT, speech language therapists recently. There's been an uptake in that. But these are the big issues affecting us and so many of our children. And we have to start the conversations here in the hope that they end up being had in the Dáil. It's crazy, but we'll come back to it. Thank you very much indeed, John Joe. I do appreciate your time this morning. That's John Joe McGinley there. If you've got a view, 086 60 25,000. But like, we're not, our young people, to give them the best chance of employment, you have early intervention, where they're assisted with their speech, occupational therapy for the mobility so that they can go to school, get an education as equal to other children as they possibly can. And then as they head towards support them through their teenage years and into adulthood, facilitate them going to college, have proper transport that allows that to happen. And then maybe look at, say, well, could you work? Could you work? Could you work? Instead, we've got this big gap in services and development. And then sort of saying, well, if we believe you can work or we're going to cut your money. I don't know. It's just we seem to do things either all the time or some of the time here backwards, which I don't understand. Okay.